but I'm not worried about it. There's nobody else. Okay.
So we're on the Aftes of the days. And I'd like to go back a little bit to Tesomenal, because I noticed something that maybe we missed. And that's in the Gemara of Rabbi Eliezer. The Gemara quotes Rabbi Eliezer, if you recall, as a proof against Shmuel that Rochuv is Kone, at least in the case of Rochuv Besada. So the Gemara tries to pull the same methodology over and over again, that maybe Rochuv is not the Rochuv of Shmuel, which is Rochuv and Tofes of Mosera, but it's the Rochuv of Manig, which means that he's Manig Baragla. So at this point, the Gemara wants to know, what's the difference between Manig Be'ir and Manig Besada? And if it's the same Manig, what difference does it make if he's standing leading the animal, or if he's sitting on the animal and he's smacking the animal with his feet and causing the animal to move? In both cases, it's a Kenyan Manig. So why is it that Rochuv is only coded in the Sada and not in the city? So the Gemara answers, because of the Tznius issue, right? That people don't usually ride a horse in the city. And yesterday we had a discussion about various exceptions to the rule, and that was on Daf Tes Amud Beis. But before we get to Daf Tes Amud Beis, let's take a look at Rav Ashi on the bottom of Tes Amud Aleph as a chazar to what we did, but I want to add something. This is five lines up before the end of Daf Tes Amud Aleph. And Rav Ashi turns to Rav Kahana and he says to him that there should be a problem if he lifts up an arnike on Shabbos, because again it's not kedarko, it's an isur mukta, and the Gemara rejects that. Then in the last line on the Amud it says Ella. Now in my Gemara it's very interesting that there is what's called Hagos V'Tziyunim, and he says that there's a Ksav Yad that apparently takes out the word Ella, and instead it should say Hacha. So just make a mental note of this, because maybe we'll come back to it a little bit later. And Rav Ashi says that Rabbi Eliezer, when he accepts the Kinyan Rochuv, what he's saying is that it's a case of Mekachu Memkar. Now, I don't know if you ever heard of Rav Avram Shor, who lived, I'm not talking about the present, current, contemporary Rav Avram Shor, but the original Rav Avram Shor. His name is identified with his sefer called the Toras Chaim. And we've quoted the Toras Chaim on numerous occasions. The Toras Chaim has our girsa, and he wants to justify our girsa. What's the Ella? And it's very strange, because we're in the middle of the presentation of Rav Ashi. So Rav Ashi in the middle says Ella, as if he changed something that existed before. Says the Toras Chaim that Rav Ashi is trying to turn the clock back to our original understanding that Rochuv is a case of Tofus Pemosera, which is classic Rochuv, and that's the Rochuv about which Shmuel said there is no Kinyan. But he says, if you recall the Sugya on Daf Ches Amud Beis, we suggested there that there's a difference between Metzia, or Hefker if you will, and the case of Mekachu Memkar. And we came to the conclusion that although Shmuel in Metzia disqualifies Rochuv, even though he's toughest by Mosera, nevertheless, Shmuel would accept Rochuv in toughest by Mosera in a case of Mekachu Memkar, where we explained because of the Das Machne element, that variable that shall I say, kicks into this calculation. Oh. So now, what becomes very critical here is the dasmachna of mekach u'memkar. Now, what is Rav Ashi going to gain here? He is going to now explain the difference between ir and soda. And his explanation will cover all the bases. What do I mean? It'll satisfy Shmuel, because now we're talking about Mekach u'Memkar, and it'll satisfy Rabbi Eliezer, who differentiates between ir and soda. And how is that going to work? The Amar Lei, because the Mocher says to the Konek, Nei Kinderach Shebnei Adam Konin. So make this Kinyan in the normal way that people would make the Kinyan. And that's the difference between Rachuv Be'ir and Rachuv Be'sada. In other words, in a case of Mekach u'Memkar, where he didn't stipulate Kni or Knei Kederach Shebnei Adam Kona, he left out that stipulation, then even Rachuv Be'ir would be Kona. Why does Rabbi Elias say that Rachuv Be'ir is not Kona? It's only because of this added, call it a condition or stipulation on the part of the Mocher, that it's got to be Kederach Shebnei Adam Kona. And people don't ride their horses in the middle of the city, except for those exceptional cases, correct? So what comes out now is that Rav Ashi's changing the whole script, so to speak, the whole agenda of this Rabbi Eliezer, in such a way that you don't even have to mention or qualify that the Rachuv here is Manig Biraglayim. Forget about Manig Biraglayim. Why? Because we're talking about Mekach u'Memkar. And in Mekach u'Memkar, Rachuv and Tok, with Tokus Mosera, your classic Rachuv, is Kona. As a result, or projected by the Dasmachna. Bless you. By the Dasmachna. And that's not a contradiction to Shmuel. However, if it was only Das Machne, then it's possible, and that's what Rav Ashi is implying here, that Rachuv Be'ir would be Kona. Why? Because Rachuv Be'ir, it's irrelevant whether it's Darko Shel Bnei Adam or Lo Darko Shel Bnei Adam. Once you have a Das Machne, then it means that any Kinyan that could be and would be viable is in fact qualifies as a Kinyan. The reason why Rabbi Eliezer, in the case of Das Machne, limits Rachuv to the city, I'm sorry, to the Sada, and excludes it in the city, is because of a specific exceptional case where he stipulated Kederach B'nei Adam Kohen. Now what I'd like to do is, I want to read to you from the Otzer Mefarshei Talmud, a summary of not only the Toras Chaim, but also of a sefer called Divrei Pinchas from Pinchas Rabinovich. And the Toras Chaim, as I told you before, is from Avram Shor, who was one of the Gaonim going back, you know, you're talking 150 years ago. And here's what he has in the name of the Toras Chaim. He says, we're accepting the gears of Ella, and he says, "Lefize ain't tzarch lahamid b'manig baraglov." Drop the original ukimta of manig baraglov, because we said that manig baraglov is a kind of a kinyan meshicha, correct? Because meshicha always means that you cause the animal to move. And that's exactly what happens in the case of manig baraglov. We don't need that. We're talking about Rachuv Hatofus Bimosera. And this Kinyan is meaningful in Mekach u'Memkar, even without Meshicha, despite the fact that he's not causing the animal to move, because it's a mesira. Mesira means if I own something, let's say in this case I own an animal and I'm holding on to the reins, I simply give you the reins, you climb onto the animal, holding on to the reins, and in das matnin, mekach u'memka, that's a viable kinyan, even according to Shmuel. Okay, so that's the Toras Chaim, which I think in and of itself is, it sheds a whole new light on this sugya. But now he quotes the Divrei Pinchas, and the Divrei Pinchas writes, "Yesh lehistapek." He vacillates back and forth. Now, the Divrei Pinchas introduces a distinction between befanov and shelo befanov, which means the following: I can sell you an object in two scenarios, in two variations. I could be standing there telling you to make the kinyan, or I could just be notifying you, or shall we say, sending you to make the kinyan. And the kinyan is performed, is implemented shelo befanov. And he says the following: if a person says he's the mocher, kni kederach shebnei adam konim, would there be a difference in rechiva, meaning rechiva be'ir as opposed to sodeh, between befanav and shelo befanav? So for example, in shelo befanav, the mocher instructs the lokeach, lech chazek ukni, go ahead and make a kinyan. And if it's shelo befanav, it's absolutely critical that the mocher, shelo befanav, instructed the lokeach to make the kinyan.
And the mocher isn't there to see it.
And the mocher is not there to see it. If the mocher is not there to see it, then it's possible that in the case of rechiva, he never told him to make this kinyan of rechiva. Why? Because he said kederach shebnei adam konim. So if he's in the city, then when he says lechazek ukni, he did not, what word am I looking for? Not instruct, but he did not authorize him, if I can use that term, to make a kinyan which is shalom kederach bnei adam. Aval befanav. However, if it's a case of befanav, then we expand the possibilities of kinyan, because the mocher is standing there, he's indicating that he wants to transfer ownership over to the lokeach. Lokeach is paying him full price, and he doesn't even have to tell him to make the kinyan. There's no need for an instruction of lechazek ukni. The very fact that they came to the agreement that the sale would take place under these conditions, here's what I would pay you, and so forth and so on, that itself undermines or supplants the necessity for an amira of lechazek ukni. Therefore, the Divrei Pinchas wants to suggest that it could be that in befanav, it would make no difference whether it was rechiva this way or rechiva that way, because since we don't need his amira, all we need is his haskama, his agreement, his gili das, that he wants to sell the object, then any kinyan would be valid. O shema, or maybe, this is the other side of his suffix, ha'amira begras. In other words, had he said nothing, enochinami rechiva with tfisa b'mosera, would be a valid kinyan. And that could apply even in the city. And the reason for that is when there's das acheres machne, then rechiva with mesira is a kinyan, even according to Shmuel, it's a valid kinyan. But now it's called Mosif Gorea. It was befanav, and he made an amira. And what did he say in the amira? That I'm not going to be machne to you unless you make a kinyan kederach b'nei adam. So in the first side of the Divrei Pinchas, once it's befanav, amira is unnecessary. And the second side, you're right, Amira is unnecessary, but Amira can machkalia, you know, Amira can make it worse. It's magras. I mean, I think this touches on something that is universal in Shas, in all of Halacha. What happens if in situation A, he doesn't need an Amira, and that would give it a broader scope, and he went ahead and he put his foot in his mouth, so to speak, by stating something that limits the scope of whatever that halacha is. So let's say, for example, if you hold mitzvah ein tzrichas kavana, so he didn't have to say anything, but then he went ahead and he said, well, I have kavana to be yotze because, you know, and he gives a whole song and dance. That might be magras. Well, for example, it could be that in Kiddushin, if it's befanov and it's oskim yoso inyan, he doesn't even have to say the words harayat mekudeshesli. But if he says the words, then he's being makadisha with amira, and if he leaves out the word li, or whatever the case may be, he might undermine and disqualify the Kiddushin. So in all cases where you don't need an amira, if he went ahead and did an amira, does the halacha recognize that amira? And that would be equal to a case where he was shalom b'fan of meeting where he needed and required that amira. Or do we say no? He doesn't require an amira, and therefore it's chal even without the amira. We can completely discount or ignore his amira. So the first side that says, well, you know what? We can ignore his amira. Then halacha is he gives him a broader scope of kinyanim, which would include even rechiva betofis mosera, despite the fact that he's be'ir, and that's not the derech to do it. But in befanov, where you don't need any amir at all you need is their agreement to the kinyan, then even though he said kinderech shebnei odom konim, he's not going to be gorea from the scope of kinyanim that would be valid. In the second side of the Divrei Pinchas, he says no. Even though befanov he didn't require the amir, but since he said keder shebnei odom konen, therefore he is limited in his das machne, and it's got to be rochav besada and not rochav beir. Okay, then. So I just wanted to add that to the discussion on daf ches on daf tes omen aleph or ches omen beis. I think in the case of Ravash. Now, boy, Rabbi Lo, so this is where we started yesterday. Ha'omel chaveru b'shoch behema zu liknos kelim shalel. Well, the Gemara says, the Gemara amends it, b'shoch behema zu uknei kelim shalel. Mahu. Mimahanya, is this a valid Meshicha for the Kalim? Meshicha de Behema laknuye Kalim. We may say that the Meshicha de Behema, which causes the Kalim to move forward, is valid, or it's not valid. So yesterday we had a whole Shtikl Torah with the story of Reb Chaim, and we spoke about Chatzitza. You know, we spoke about the fact that the object that you want to be Kona is inside another object. You have to get inside the matafa, and here you have the kelim on top of the behema. And do we view his action as if it was on the kelim, even though it really wasn't on the kelim, but he's causing the kelim to move, albeit through the animal? Or do we say no, that the animal is like a chatzitza, it's like an interruption?
If the causing to move is not a kinyan on kelim, it's a kinyan on behema.
Right, but Mashiach is also a kinyan on Kalim, right? Any kinyan on
Kalim, not
the Behemoth. Well, now we're saying that maybe all you have to do is cause the Kalim to move.
But moving is not one of the things that causes Kalim. If you throw a Kli, you caused it to move.
Right.
You have not been coned in any way.
Well, I would say the following. If you threw it in a way that it's not accessible to you, then you're right, that's not a kinyan. But if you moved it in a way that's accessible to you, right? So the machne is saying to the kohen, you know, take this behema and use it to bring the kelim into your rishus. Like, let's say he rides the behema. Again, we have to discuss where exactly he ends up with the behema. Did he take it out of the rishus of the mocher or not?
Yeah.
Those are nuances and details that have to be ironed out. But one thing I can guarantee you, he is taking the kelim towards himself, wherever that might be. Whether it's in his rishus, the rishus lokeach, or somehow, and the mocher has no objection. You know, either Amma, he's telling him to use the behema as the how do you say it in English? In Hebrew, it's called the seret na. You know what I'm talking about? Like in automation, they have a conveyor belt. I don't know what it's called in English.
A conduit.
Yeah, conveyor belt. There's a word for it, but in Hebrew it's called the seret na. So what you have is this kind of escalator that moves along, and you put an object on top of the escalator.
Right.
If you're mafil the escalator.
Conveyor belt.
That's excellent.
The one, yeah.
Right, what did I call it? I don't even remember anymore. When you use. I gave some sort of English. Anyway, if it's a conveyor belt, it could be that by activating the conveyor belt, you are considered to have moved the object from place to place. And again, assuming that it's accessible, you know, if it ends up in the middle of the ocean, that's nothing. So that's the way I understood the Gemara. However, yesterday we pointed out that Tosis, in this very long Tosis, Meshoch, seems to take a different approach. And that is that if a person, the Machna in this case, would say to the Kohen, Meshoch Kupa, then Bevadai, Tosa says, no doubt about it, he'd be Kohen Masha B'Tocha. And the whole problem with Behema is because an animal has freedom of choice, so to speak. I mean, you won't find that in Tosa, so don't look for it. But what Tosa says is that the animal is doing the Meshicha.
The animal is not a container. Kupa is a container.
Correct. The kupa would be like the conveyor belt that we spoke before. Whereas Tosis says the reason why Rabbi Lazar has doubts about the behema is because the behema is not like a conveyor belt. It's very similar on the outside to a conveyor belt carrying with it the kelim shalgaba. But here, it's not that the animal is moving because of some animation, you know, some pressing on an electric button. The animal is moving at the end of the day because the animal decided to move. The halicha is considered the halicha of the behema. Now you want to do a meshicha, you want to say that you're the one who's moving the kelim. Why? Because you're moshech the behema. Well, that's not really true. When you're moshech the behema, you really cause the behema to move. And I think what Tosis is saying here is that, again, if I could use this term without confusing myself and you, it's like a koch sheni. What do I mean by koch sheni? I shoot up a ball. Let's say I throw a ball up to the top of a date tree, and it knocks down the dates, and this cluster of dates hits somebody on the head. So what are we going to say? Is he chai for that? That's really koch sheni, because he puts one koch towards the dates, and that would be his koach, but now the dates come down and do the rest. So in a sense, in the conveyor belt, you could say it's koach rishon, because I caused the conveyor belt to convey, to transport this object. But in the case of the behema, it's true that I'm causing the behema to move, but ultimately it's the behema itself that's carrying the kelim and moving the kelim. That was the suffix of Rabbi Lazar according to Tosus. He says, "Lachen yesh l'stapik imeshichas ha'toil l'kelim." And then he quotes a Rosh, who says that l'maskonas ha'sugya, where we talk about, as we'll soon see, a behema kfusa, that the animal is tied up. Nevertheless, stam kinias behema hi al yidei shegarbi lo lahalich. Generally speaking, if it wasn't kafus, how do you effectuate a kinyan on a behemoth? You cause it to move. Is yesh l'stapik ha'im mishichasa toil l'kelim sholeh. Even in the case of kafus, we still have room to say that we look at the classic case of mishicha, where the animal is not kafus, and in those cases, the animal is causing the halicha. so that even in the case where the animal is kafus, we still see it as if the animal is operating here and active in terms of the kelim. So all that is tosfos. Now the Rashba says that im haya omer lo limshoch es hakelim, if he would just say the words make a meshicha on the kelim, those are the only words that came out of the mouth of the Makna, and it was the Makna who decided to exploit, to take advantage of the behema, to move the kelim, you know, let's say they were large, heavy kelim, and he couldn't do it himself, so he uses the animal as a beast of burden. Hoya kona. Then says the Rashba, he would certainly be kona. Which is really interesting, because we just finished saying, according to Tosus, that the animal is an active agent here, the etzem alicha nasis al yidei behema atzma. What difference does it make? What sense would we make out of the Rashba that if the Makna says to the Lokeach, Meshoch es HaKelim, and it was the Lokeach himself who decided to avail himself and lighten his burden by using the Behemah as his instrument to carry the Kelim, in such a case, says the Rashbi, would be Kona, just like the case of a Kupa, which we said he's Kona, the contents of the Kupa, when he meets the Kupa. Now, how do you solve the problem of HaBehemah Atzma Holeches simply by saying, well, it was the Lokeach's decision to utilize the behemoth for the Meshicha, and the Machna didn't say to him. According to the Rashba, I didn't finish up, our case and Rabbi Lozer's vacillation is a case where he says to him, do a Meshicha on the animal, and you'll be Kona the Kelim. So the Machna is Machvin, he's very careful to say that he should be Moshech the behemoth. And now the question is, can you be Moshech a behemoth and be Kona the Kelim without being Moshe, without being Kona the behema? So we were analyzing the level of kpeda on the part of the mocher when he explicitly said to him, be Moshe the behema and be Kona the kelim. So it seems like the following, that at least according to the Rashba, the fact that the behema is holechas me'atzma, that in and of itself would not undermine the kinyan, would not disqualify the kinyan. The Kenya Meshicha. And Haraya, I prove it to you. Because if the Mocher said to the Lokeach Knei, and basically do a Meshicha on the Kelim, then according to the Rashba, Rabbi Lozer without question would verify the validity of the Kenyan of moving the Behema in order to move the Kelim. What happened to the principle of HaBehema Holeches Me'atzma? So it seems like the Rashba is not bothered by this HaBehema Holeches Me'atzma. And in the Rashba's frame of reference, if you activate the Behema and you pull it or cause it to move, and now it moves the Kelim, then it's as if you did a Meshicha on the Kelim, despite the fact that it's the animal that's moving the Kelim. The problem is, says the Rashba, that the Makna was Makpin, that there should be a full-fledged Meshicha on the behemoth. And that's reminiscent of the sugi that we learned earlier about Kedera. Knei Kedera Shebnei Odom Konen. That a Machna could specify and limit his Das Machna. Now I'm not sure why, according to the Rashba, if the holy words that came out of the mouth of the Machta was Meshoch es HaBehema, I don't know why that sets up a kapeda that the Kenyan has to be effectuated through a Meshicha on the Behema. But again, we've seen over and over again how careful and how meticulous we are about the words of the Mocher. I mean, to such an extent that there's a difference between Kedei LaHaknos and Knei, right? Which we tried to rack our brains yesterday. I mean, what difference does it make if he says Kedei LaHaknos or if he says Knei? But Kedei LaHaknos means he hasn't specified exactly what the Kenyan will be. So the Rashba says in Rabbi Lezer's frame of reference, he specified that the Kenyan should be a Meshicha on the Behema. Well, then he messed up, because he's not being mocked to him the Behema, he's being mocked to him the Kelim. So we're up to today, Amar Rava. This is where we want to start for today. And we're on Daf Tes Amud Beis. And we're going to drop down, I think it's about 8 lines from the top of the Amud. Do you want to count that for me? Is it 7 or 8? Amar Rava. So Rava says the following. E Amar Le Knei Behema Uknei Kelim. Supposing the mocher or the makne would say the following words: make a kinyan on the behema, and as a result, you will be kona the kelim, meaning you'll get a double kinyan. You'll get a kinyan sai on the behema and sai on the kelim. So Rava says, in such a case, me kani kelim. Which is a rhetorical statement implying that there's no valid kinyan that he can make on these kelim. And I don't know why Rava is saying such a thing. This statement of Rava is a pella. Just because he said that he should be coded both the behema and the kelim, therefore he's certainly not coded the kelim. Why is that so? So I'll just read to you his footnote here, and maybe you can help me make sense out of it. He says, "V'chizochahu bekelim, v'arei im al hamashicha ato mistapek im himo ila." Right? If you had a suffix as to the mashicha, the kelim, whether it's valid for the kelim as a kinyan, in kein tzarich lomar. Shekona es hakelim midin kinyan chotzer. Wow, this is a major curveball. And he quotes this here in the name of the Tosa Rosh. That what's going on now is that when the Machna says to the Kona Knei Behema, he means that in order for you to be Kona Kalim, you have to make a kinyan on the Behema. Now the Behema becomes the chotzer. And you're going to be Kona the Kalim Midin Chatzer. So it means that after he's Kona the Behema becomes his Chatzer, and now he can be Kona the Kalim there in his Chatzer, Midin Chatzer. Is that what we're going to say over here? That's impossible, says Rava. That's an untenable position. Why? Because chotzer alechas, even chotzer alechas lo kona. You cannot set up a chotzer that's a movable, a moving chotzer. And therefore, if the machne wants to be, he wants to be machne the behema as a chotzer for the kelim, that's a waste of time. That's a losing proposition. You cannot set up a behema as a chotzer, because the behema is on the run, it's on the move, and there's no such thing as a movable chotzer. Now the source for this is a Gemara in Gittin on Daf Ayin Zayin. The Gemara says that in the pasuk it says in Shmos, "Im he matzei ti matzei biyado." And the Gemara says, "Eli elu biyado v'gago v'chatziro v'karfifo b'nolon," and that's going to be the source for chotzer. And what's common to all these cases is that it's a chotzer she'enam aleches. So the Gemara says now that the behema itself is behema aleches; it's enam mishtameres, and therefore it cannot be used and function as a chotzer. Now later on in Daf Yudam and Beis, we're going to have a whole sugya about what is the nature of chatzer. Is it midin yad, it's kona midin yad, or it's midin shlichus? So the Rashba here asks the following question. If, which is one man de omar there on Daf Yudam and Beis, a chatzer is midin shlichus, the ribu is in the parish of shlichus, so who cares whether or not the chatzer is maleches? Bishleim, if you want to say that chotzer is midin yad, well, yad means that I have a tfisis yad on the object. If it's moving around, I can hardly say I have a tfisis yad. But if I'm going to apply the principle of shlichus, what difference does it make? A shlich is always mahalach. Harei af shechotzer zaza, even though the chotzer is moving, tzricha lahoil, it should logically be effective. Kishem shekol shliach bo liknos af shehuzaz. Every shliach is movable, and if the klutz is your shliach, what difference does it make if it's a moving target, a moving shliach? And the Rashba seems to leave this question unanswered, and the Ritva in the later generation comes forward to try to answer this question. He says, Shliach holich midaito shalom shaleach avehima oleches l'das atzma. So there are different levels of a chatzam aleches. There's one chatzam aleches that's in control, that's discipline. And the mishaleach is going to tell the shliach exactly when and how he should fulfill his shlichus. But in the case of a behema, the behema is holeches midas atzma. And since it's maleches mitzad atzma, therefore it's not a chotzer. So the Gemara asks, v'chitema k'sha'omda, maybe the animal right this second is standing in its place, it's stationary, v'ha, kol she'ilu mahalich lo kona, ome v'yoshev lo kona. The very fact that it could simply get up in a split second and decide to move on its own volition, it's not tied down, that means it's a chotzer maleches. V'hilchisot. The Gemara's answer is as follows. Bikfusa. That this animal was tied up. Its legs were tied. It doesn't have the ability to move. And then it's like a chotzer sheinu maleches. And in this case, it was pashut to Rabbi Elazar that if he's zocher in the behemah, he's also zocher in the kelim. And Rabbi Elazar was mistapek in a case where the behemah is kfusa, and he doesn't want to make a kinyan on the behemah, he just wants to be kona the kelim, and the safek is whether he can be kona the kelim without being kona the behemah. Now it's interesting, this safek remains what we call an ibay delo ifshita, and the Gemara does not come up with any final conclusion here about what the din would be and whether he would be a valid kinyan on the kelim. So I have two notes here. One is the long one and one is the short one. Which one do you want first? I'll start with the short one. He says that according to the Rush, in this case we're going to apply the principle of Ein motziyin mama miyada bailin b'safek. That is, we're going to go back to the Marakama, and since we're not sure whether or not this kinyan on the kelim is valid because the animal is kfusa, then we're going to have to leave the animal in the possession of the mocher. We're going to have to invalidate the kinyan mitzad ein motzin mamon mi muchzaka mi amuchzak mitzad sofer. The Ran, on the other hand, says that kemon sha'asas ha-meshicha bershus, once the mocher instructs the lokeach to implement a meshicha, harei hu muchzak. Now the lokeach who grabbed the animal is muchzak. V'ein motziyin miyado misafek. So this is a fascinating, profound machlokes. I mean, one opinion, which is the opinion of the Rosh, is that let's go back to the kinyan itself. The purpose of the kinyan is to remove the object from its original possession. If you have doubts about that, then you have to leave the object in its original muchzak. The Ran, on the other hand, understands that muchzokas depends upon tfisa. And tfisa. And if I told you to get a hold of these kelim, and you did so, then if I want to disqualify that kinyan, it's a motzi b'chavel haraya, you're the muchzok, you the lokeach now have possession over it, and me, I the seller, have the burden of proof to disqualify the kinyan. That was the smaller of two footnotes. Now we'll mention the larger footnote. That's also based on this long Tosis Meshoch. Tosis is bothered. He says, "Lechora, hayyochol estapek al biofen shekana es habehema im hamashichem o'il lekelim olo." He wants to know why is it that Rabbi Lazar couched his suffix in a case where there was no intention of transferring ownership over the behemoth. Even in a case where there was intention to be machna the behemoth, we still have a problem as far as the kelim is concerned, because it's a chatzah maleches.
He's going to the behemoth, then he's going to the kelim later on.
Well, not necessarily, because it's a chatzah maleches. So why do you emphasize here that in the context of the suffix of Reb Lazar, there was no intention to be machna the behemoth? What difference does it make?
Yeah,
even in the case where he had full intention to be machna the behemoth, it's a problem of chatzah maleches vis-a-vis the kelim. So that suffix should still apply. He says, "Ein lomar shekasher kones a behemah bevadei zocha bekelim din chatzer." And it's not a chisorn of chatzah maleches. Why? Mishum shem kein gam ata yeshlo lizkos bekelim midin chatzah. Shari amocher mashilo es habehema kidei liknos ba. Ubechatzah sheula mo'ila v'chatzah sheula mo'ila lekinyin chatzah. Even what? Even if it's a chatzah maleches? I'm not sure what he means over here. He says that if he's kona the behema, he will certainly be kona the kelim he did mashicha. No, I'm sorry. Let's start again. If he's even, we're up to Tosus Kash, right? Even in a case, Tosus asks, where he was mocked in the behema, we still have a problem on the kelim. Oh, so we need to answer, no, there's no problem on the kelim. Why? Because now the behemoth is given over to the lokeach as a chotzer, and a mocher mashil lo es ha behemoth kidei liknos ba. So we have now a case of a chotzer she'ula, that you borrowed someone's chotzer, and you can be kona with that chotzer. I'm not sure how that undermines the problem of chotzer maleches. But let's see the answer of Tosfos. Tirtzu b'Tosfos, Shekshan mocher omer lo mishoch ein kavanoso lahashil lo es gufa behem kidei liknos al yodo mitam chotzel hu rak mati lo lasos al yodo kinyin mishicha b'keilim. Wow. This is a very subtle distinction. Tosfos distinguishes between an actual hash'ola, in which case, despite the fact that the animal is a chotzer maleches, it could still operate as a kinyan because of the hash'ola. But in a case where he's not mashal him the behema, he just says to him, "You know what? I don't mind. I'm not makpid if you'll use my behema as a kinyan mashiach on your kelim." In that case, we have the suffix. We're not sure whether or not this behema could function as a conduit for the mashiach on the kelim, even though he's not being machnid in the kelim, but he's giving him rishus and he's saying you could use the kelim. You could use the behema. He's not bequeathing to the lokeach ownership rights on the behema, but just simply a heterish tamshus. And here the Gemara is mistapeg, well, can he use the behema as a chotzer upon which or through which he's kona the kelim?
You've invented a new category. Heterish tamshus is hashala.
Right. What's the difference? As I said before, Tosus comes up with this a subtle difference. He says that heter shtamshus is not the same as hashola. Hashola requires a maisa kinyan, and the shol becomes a bailim. I'll tell you exactly how I know that. But in the case of heter shtamshus, I'm allowing to use something that's mine, but I'm not giving you any kinyanim whatsoever. I'm only removing my gzela, my kpeda for gzela, but I'm not in a positive way transferring any sort of ownership to you. Masha'enkein in Mashiel, there's a kinyan, and he makes a transaction with ownership rights of a shoel. Now, how do I know the shoel has ownership rights? So for this, you have to see two sugyas. One is the sugya of shvach, which means what happens if the animal goes up in price, or produces giza or peros. And the second sugya you have to see is what's called shamin l'shoel, which means the following, that if, actually, we pass an ain shamin l'shoel, which means that if the shoel is chayev for onsim, or for other kinds of mishaps that the animal dies, even onsu, then he's chayv to pay. How much does he pay? Does he pay the full $500 worth of the animal, or does he pay $400 because the carcass is worth $100? So, for example, in the case of a shomer sachar, or for that matter, a shomer chidon, who's chayv for pshia, we have a din of shuma. Shuma means we evaluate the carcass on the market and we subtract that from the original value of the animal live. And that's what he pays. In the case of shoel, he's going to pay the entire animal, the whole value. Ein shomin l'shoel. And it's the shoel's responsibility, if he so wants to haul up the carcass of the animal, the nevela, and sell it and get his 100. And my Rebbe used to always say that proves that a shoel has kinyonim of she'ela. And that's why a shoel shalomidas is a gazlan, because he's doing a maisa gzela. She'ela is a maisa gzela. Why? Because she'ela itself is a kinyon. And he has to effectuate a maisa kinyon. And then he becomes a shoel. And it could be once he becomes a shoel, he has ownership rights in the animal. As a result of those ownership rights of the animal, his chiyuv, in event that the animal goes kaput, is to pay out of pocket the exact value of the animal, as it were, before the mishap took place. So, B'li Neder, tomorrow we'll try to pick up this tosus and sharpen it up. And.